you know, we start by saying we live in a fallen world and that we're all sinners and that we're all in a process of sanctification and none of us are quite there yet. And yet God chooses us as his imperfect people to do his work. And it's, of course, as you would expect, inevitable that there are going to be relationship difficulties and challenges. And so much of the writing of the New Testament is addressing problems within the church, isn't it? And often those are problems between people. And so much of the Old Testament is about relationships that were either good relationships or bad relationships. And there are lessons that can be learned from all of those. So the whole Bible is really a treasure trove of resource for dealing with relationship building and dealing with relationship failure. And within an ICMDA, you know, we have quite a diverse constituency. We've got, there's 107 countries. We have 20 staff. They come from 12 different countries. They probably speak at least 20 different languages between them. We've got 80-odd field workers. They come from 60 different countries. And so you can imagine that together with the differences that there are in life experience and personality, there's also the differences in culture and language and the possibility for misunderstandings that arise. And so, you know, you expect there to be some difficulties. And then we have the added challenge that some parts of the world in which we have people are at war with other parts of the world where we have people. So the war between Russia and Ukraine, well, we've got field workers in both Russia and Ukraine, or the war recently between Azerbaijan and Armenia, we've got field workers in both of those countries. And so there's that tension as well. And of course, the Bible is full of relationship difficulties. And sometimes these difficulties between people who are, you know, very much involved in God's work. Think of Paul and Barnabas, for example, who had such a bad fallout that they couldn't even work together for several years over Mark. Or think of those two women, Euodia and Syntyche, in the church at Philippi, who Paul was writing to. You know, tell them to agree with one another, he's saying. You can hear the frustration from the Apostle Paul. Or think of the trouble Paul had. The book of 2 Corinthians is to a church which had, in large part, were having doubts about him and had rejected him, and yet he was the apostle who'd set it up in the first place. And so he was struggling there with them. So just some principles. I've got here, attend to team crises urgently and steady the ship. And I've given the example there of 2 Samuel 13 to 19, which is actually the story of David and Absalom. And we know David was a man after God's heart who didn't make many mistakes. His big mistake, of course, was over Bathsheba. And that led to fallout in his family and resulted indirectly in the breakdown between him and Absalom. And David essentially did not deal with the problem with Absalom. He kind of turned a blind eye to it. He tried to ignore it, and he didn't deal with it. And it got worse and worse and worse. We have a, and then in the end, the only way it could be resolved was that because Absalom became such a threat to the kingdom, and in fact to David's own life, that Joab, David's general, took it into his own hands to rid the world of Absalom. And that resolved the problem. But that was a pretty radical solution, but it was necessary at that point. We have a saying in surgery, if you forgive the slang, but we say, never let the sun set on undrained pus. Now, when you've got pus and an abscess, and that abscess is getting bigger and bigger and more painful, you need to take a big scalpel and let it out. And some team crises are like abscesses, where they just grow and they get worse and worse and worse between two individuals. If you don't deal with them, they could endanger the whole organization. So you need to drop everything, step in, and deal with it. And I've learned this the hard way because I've had times in my past when I have not stepped in to deal with a problem when I should have. And it was because it was going to be really difficult to do. I didn't want to get involved in it. And the result was that it just got worse and became a much bigger problem to deal with. The second thing is to be accountable yourself. And 1 Samuel 13 is this story of Saul, who, of course, was not accountable and had that run-in with Samuel. By contrast, David, you see, when he sinned with Bathsheba, we get his confession in Psalm 51, and we see he was fully and truly repentant, you know, absolutely broken over it. And so when there's a, I find if there's a difficulty between, you know, me and another staff member or volunteer, or between two volunteers or staff members, the first question I've always got to ask myself is, you know, what have I done to make this worse, or perhaps even create this situation? Or what haven't I done that could have improved it? And always, because there's always something that as a leader you can do. The third thing is, and if you're approaching the problem then initially with an apology, it makes it much more easy to resolve if people can see that you're not just pointing the finger at them, but seeing it as a problem that we together have to get through. Number three, don't get frustrated with your team. This is the story of Moses in the desert, and the people are whinging as they often did. And on this occasion, he is told by God to speak to the rock, but he's so angry he strikes the rock and he dishonors God in the presence of the people. And we know as a result of that, Moses was not allowed into the promised land. That was the issue. And so don't get so frustrated with your team that you dishonor God. Be gracious in their presence. Don't be jealous of your team members. This was Saul's problem with David. Rather than rejoicing in David's gifts and abilities, he just got jealous. And you'll find in any position of leadership, there are going to be people coming up through your team who are actually better than you, and they have more potential than you have, and they can do things more effectively than you can. And it don't be jealous of people like that, but rather see it as an opportunity that can you give them every opportunity to grow and develop, that your job is to help to make them into the person that God's chosen them to be. And then ultimately, maybe even to hand over the leadership to them and be, you know, be prepared to, you know, when you've reached the end of your time. Investing in key relationships. That this was, again, David and Absalom, that he failed to do this. And the people who are closest to us in our senior team, or who we're directly responsible for, should be getting a disproportionate amount of our time. Now, you know, we know Jesus loved everyone equally. He loves all his disciples. But when you look at the amount of time he spent with various people, you could be forgiven to thinking he loved others more than others, because you know, he gave so much time to the 12, and particularly to Peter, James, and John, the three within the 12. But that wasn't because he did not love the whole world and or all disciples. It was because that was the best strategic way to do it, that he it's far better to invest in a few people really deeply and then encourage them to invest in others than to spread yourself too thin and not be able to give people the attention that they deserve. And then don't be too uncompromising or too hard a taskmaster. Lay on the grace. 1 Kings 12 is the story of Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. And you might remember that because of Solomon's sin, the prophet Ahijah told him that God was going to take 10 of the tribes away from him. But because of God's mercy, it was going to happen in the time of his son and not in his time. And so it did happen in the time of Rehoboam when the 10 northern tribes rebelled. And they rebelled because he was too tough with them. That was the human reason. And he was advised, he took advice from a number of young men who were a bit stroppy, and he ended up saying to them, you know, you my little finger's thicker than my father's waist. In other words, if you think Solomon was tough, well, you've got no idea what's coming from me. And of course, this just alienated people. And if he'd been more gracious with them, then the outcome may have been different. Well, of course, God prophesied that this was going to happen. But I remember when I was very involved in public policy, and we were campaigning against euthanasia, and I was doing a lot of media stuff with this. And I had a media consultant who I worked with for several years, who was very, very good at advising about how to deal with certain issues. And then he got busy with other things, and he appointed another person on his staff to work with us. And I initially had difficulty because this guy had, I thought he was making decisions without properly asking me and acting on his own bat, and I was quite worried about it. So I went back to talk to the initial chap I'd worked with, who was his boss, and the hope that he'd go and have a word to this guy and tell him he had to pull his head in, And to my surprise, he said to me, he listened very carefully and graciously to what I had to say. And then he said, "You know what, Peter?" He says, "I think you need to cut him a bit more slack." In other words, this guy is very good and creative. He'll be great for you, but you just got to give him a bit more leash and not hold him on too tight a leash. Allow him to be creative. He's really committed to the task. And it was great advice for me. And there are situations when we really do need to lay on the grace with people to retrieve a relationship. And then finally, to remember that relationship breakdown is not the end. And it's not necessarily your fault either. You may have played a part in it, but of course, there are lots of people who broke their relationship with the Lord Jesus himself, although he was perfect and never sinned. And the sin may be largely on the other side of it. But relationship breakdown is not necessarily end. There is usually a way back, but it may take time. And so we read, for example, with Paul and Barnabas, they had a huge bust up and they couldn't work together. And so they went off in their own teams, but actually that doubled the work and meant a lot more people heard the gospel. And then later on, we're told that they got back together again, and that Paul's broken relationship with Mark was also healed as well. And so there may be a time when there is a relationship difficulty between two people, and you can help them come together and be reconciled and respect one another and work again effectively. And you hope that that will be the outcome. But if it's not possible, and it may be that the best way to deal with it is just to put them in different parts of the organization or the ministry so that they don't have to deal with each other, and then keep on praying and hope that they put them with people they can work well with, and then hope that in time they will come around. And often, I'd say perhaps usually they do, but it may take time.